Change.
We need to change things up.
It's a show about change.
Welcome to Bob's Basement. Here's your host, Bob Willette.
Welcome to Bob's Basement, the very first episode of 2022. And virtually joining me in my basement today is Dave Kaufman. Dave Kaufman, a renowned talk show host, heard all across this country. Dave, thank you for joining me virtually in my basement.
Bob, a pleasure. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. So I'm going to be straight up front here. Dave Kaufman and I follow each other on Twitter. We have in common that we're both from radio. Both of us currently work for radio. You work for the company I most recently worked for before the company I work for now. But that's about it. And that we don't know each other. You're the first guy that I'm going to have on the show to talk about change from broadcast specifically that I actually don't. We don't know anything about each other, really, beyond what we tweet about.
Right. And from your Twitter feed, I can tell that we have many causes that we're both sympathetic to and obviously both huge fans of Canadian music.
Yes.
Probably not too far apart age wise.
Looks about the same. Yeah. You might be a bit younger like than this, me, but yeah.
Maybe just like a smidge. But I feel like this is going to be a great conversation. And I'm looking forward to hearing what my thoughts on change are. Yeah. I'm not really sure yet.
Good. That's good. I usually start in the past, but I'm going to start now because I think a lot of the people who download this podcast are from the Toronto area because of my background with Toronto Mic'd and working with Mike Boone, working with the Humble and Fred show. Most of my radio career has basically been between St. Catharines, Ontario and Kingston, Ontario. I've been on the air, pretty much for 20 plus years in Ontario. So most of my people are Ontarians, but you're a Montreal guy. Are you Anglo-Montreal? Are you West Island? Are you from the area?
From the heart of the city.
Okay,
Anglo-Montreal are from Montreal. We the ones who are from the city take pride in not being from the West Island. We look at the West Island as an Ottawa outpost.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, maybe that's more Hudson and just, the further along towards St. Anne de Bellevue that you live, then the closer it is that you're to Toronto.
Okay,
fair instead enough. Of saying that you're a 5-hour drive from Toronto, you're a 4.5-hour drive from Toronto. It's a game changer, I guess.
It really is, yeah.
But no, a proud Anglophone Montrealer, and it's funny how that badge kind of works. Like in Quebec, outside of Quebec, I'm very proud to be from Montreal. When I'm in Ontario, I'm a proud Quebecer. When I'm in the States, I'm a proud Canadian.
Yes.
So it's funny how that kind of works out as the Anglo, the minority within the minority. It's something.
My next theme I've been toiling. We're on 56 episodes in to the podcast about change. And I was thinking about what my next theme could be. And something that keeps coming up is perspective. Perspective is something we could always talk about because perspective changes everything as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. This is something that I have not had a lot of opportunity to do consistent national radio.
Yeah.
But when I dip into that, I'm constantly trying to think about who is listening and how many different people across Canada are listening. Because there really isn't, as much as we want to pretend that there's a stereotypical Canadian, he or she does not exist.
Well, there
are. It's interesting to try and throw something out there that has mass appeal. And sometimes that's really tough.
I want to get into that because there's been so many failed national shows, especially on the sports side of things in radio. But before we do that, I want to talk about how you are heard. So you work for iHeartRadio, you work for Bell.
I'm a freelancer.
So you were a freelancer. Yeah. Oh, so they bring you in.
I'm a freelancer. They bring me in. I have about almost a decade under my belt freelancing with CJAD 800 in Montreal.
Right.
And in
legendary station.
And in the last, I guess, really since COVID, that has turned into much more work with News Talk 1010 in Toronto and nationally across the iHeart network. Right when the first wave hit, I was asked to do a once a week Friday night into Saturday morning, midnight to 4 a.m. across the country.
Okay.
I think at the time, and I don't know this for sure, but I think at the time, maybe there was a thought that if the station was spending all day telling people to wear a mask and be safe and be careful, broadcasting an American show that peddled in certain views that might not go along with that might not have been the best thing. So I was thrilled to be able to have an opportunity. And you know what? The phones rang pretty much for the first 3 hours of the show of Canadians who were scared, who were lonely, who couldn't sleep. I don't know if I remember my dreams were insane
when
COVID first started.
Yeah.
And it felt, you know, without any kind of a degree, it felt like a mix between an entertainer and Fraser Crane at the start listening. There. I'm listening. And it was an incredible opportunity that lasted for a good few months until things calmed down a little bit.
Right.
But again, it's really hard to think about. There are so many different people across this country and you want to try and speak to all of them. But you also really, I think one of the tricks in this business is that you want to speak to one person.
Well, that's the idea. It's supposed to be an intimate medium, right? And as a program director, that's what I'm always peddling is as much as it's a party, especially in Top 40 radio, it still is at its core, somebody is listening alone in their car on their way to work and you want to have a one-on-one conversation with them, or in your case, alone in their basement, terrified in the corner, you know, like as is hiding from the world because
it
of
wasn't,
what's going
let's,
on.
Let's be clear. It wasn't all that. And you know, we adapted, but sure. At the start, I remember the first show I did, my theme was tell me one good thing that happened to you today.
Right.
Because I figured we could at least all bond around one decent thing, whatever the hell it was. And there really wasn't a lot to pick from at the time.
Yeah.
But it was nice to hear people try and dig deep and come up with something good so that we could all contribute to a good conversation.
And let's face it, talk radio, generally speaking, not your go-to place for positivity, right? Like generally speaking.
No, and maybe that's why I haven't been able to figure out a full-time gig. I do not peddle in controversy just for the sake of it.
Yes.
And that's okay. I'm pretty cool with who I am and how I comport myself. So I'm okay with that.
So that's who Dave Kaufman is now professionally. This is what you're doing now. You're freelance. The bulk of what most people I think right now would know you for is the work you do with iHeartRadio.
Yeah, that and a podcast that I do with McGill University's Business School.
I saw that. It looks way above my pay grade, man.
I promise.
It looks really smart.
But so I promise you that that's what they brought me in there. It is super smart, but my goal is to try and make it like digestible for us plebs.
What's the name of it?
Myself included. It's called The New Normal.
Right.
And it's a part of Delve, which is McGill's Days Hotel Business School publication.
Yeah.
And it's honestly, it's so much fun to talk to these PhDs and professors who are working on such interesting shit and get to take this like really in-depth conversation and read their stuff and try and pick apart the stuff that makes it relevant to us. And us is everyone.
Everybody.
It's business and COVID and climate change. And I'm so passionate about it. So I get that more people will hear me just by driving in their car and hearing that. But man, what I could do to direct people there, because to me, that's something that's really special. And I'm thrilled to be able to have added podcasting to my arsenal after being on terrestrial radio for so long.
I think there's a great, I don't read a lot of those executive power books, but the few that I have read, there was a great quote and it was strive to be the dumbest person in the room. And it sounds like what that show is what it is, because like, I would be the dumbest person in the room in the most honest way. But then you're surrounded by people who are so smart and they're going to make you better. Right. And don't be intimidated by other people's intellect or other people's skill sets.
Look, when people are smart and I'm fortunate like you are, we get to talk to smart people all the time. They just want to share what they know.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you stick a microphone in front of them and ask them the right question.
Sure.
I mean, it's a gift to be able to do that. I mean, the amount of time that I'm forced to listen to stupid people and end up hitting my head against the wall afterwards. So yeah. No, this is such a joy. And at a time when we need more analysis of what we're doing and what we're dealing with. I mean, I did one with a professor last March about the vaccine supply chain.
Wow.
I remember pushing to get it out and saying, we need to get it out now because this is going to be relevant because people are going to start lining up tomorrow. And it was just, we did everything we could with the editor and just got it out there. And I almost feel like we could just like change a couple of words around and just send it out again.
Just exactly. Well, they do repeats right on television for a reason. Sometimes things resonate for a long time. All right. So let's talk about Dave Kaufman as a young man in Montreal. How, like, I see on your LinkedIn, I see some time at TSN Radio. I see some time before that, before broadcast. This is a podcast about change. I don't think radio has been a part of your life the whole time. So what did you come out of school looking to do?
Radio has been a huge part of my life for a very long time. And I was one of those kids that used to fall asleep with a radio under his pillow. And the two hosts that I listen to are two friends and mentors to this day. One was the Montreal radio host who I hounded for an internship after I finished my history degree from UWO and came home and the Expos had just left. And I thought, oh God, I need to channel this into something. Let me go talk about sports. And I used to sit outside of a coffee shop that he would go to for his pre radio show coffee that was around the corner from where I lived. And every day I would walk back with him while he had his coffee and convinced him to let me be his intern. That started I worked way too long in that internship because it felt way cooler to sit in the studio and clip up audio and be a part of the show than sit at home with the radio on and listen to the show. Yeah. I thought, why
I can be part of it?
Exactly. I can be in it now. How cool is that?
And who is that?
His name is Mitch Melnick. Okay. And he's the drive show host on TSN Radio in Montreal.
Yeah.
And my earliest vivid memory was of Mitch Melnick was him delivering the news right after I got into my dad's car after hockey practice in November of 1991 that Magic Johnson had HIV.
Wow.
And it's like stuck in my head is him jumping in and like breaking news in the middle of the report. And I have very radio and CJD especially was, you know, on in my parents' cars and on in my grandparents' kitchen and has always been this force. And I think a lot of Anglo Montrealers have felt that way through the years.
Sure.
And it's a pretty cool feeling to be with that. But back to Mitch, who's a massive force in the city. And I can tell you, not just from the sports side, but also from the music side, has been a massive influence on me. His thank you to me for the internship was to go down to Fenway Park with me and see the Rolling Stones.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Mitch and a couple of his business partners just put on a concert in that small window where we could actually do stuff in Montreal.
I remember that.
at the end of November, there was a concert to support Montreal musicians where over 30 bands performed.
Nice.
And it was a belated 80th birthday Bob Dylan show. It was the most incredible thing. This is, really absolutely a huge influence on me musically and journalistically. And of course, and the other radio show was a radio show called Play at the Plate that was hosted by Terry Haig. Terry was the Expos postgame show.
Oh, okay.
And Terry is the best. He's just a classic. He's from New York. He's got that gravelly old New York accent.
Nice.
And I know one of his claims to fame that I absolutely trip out over is that he was a young Cub reporter or intern, I believe, at the Montreal Gazette in the mid-1960s. And there was an assignment, and they decided that the best person to cover that assignment would be the youngest reporter. So the byline on the Beatles' first concert in Montreal is Terry Haig.
Wow. That's pretty cool. That's a great guy. That's a great mentor, right? That's a guy. Mm-hmm. Those kind of guys, you know, they're getting older. There's less and less of them around, but you know, your story of hanging out on the show longer than you should have. I can mimic that story very well with the Humble and Fred show here in Toronto. I flunked out of university because I was hanging out with Humble and Fred far too long and missing all my early morning classes.
Yeah, but that was your university.
It was. I ended up. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it was. Yeah. I mean, I lost some dough, but I mean, I ended up getting a job. But I hung out with those guys for free, getting up at 4 a.m. for like almost a year, probably.
And it's amazing how this industry just grabs you and there's nothing you can do once you fall in love with it.
No, it's true. And it's, I mean, I've had so many, I think so many people have very similar stories, and those they're getting harder and harder to do right now. It's absolutely impossible because you can't have people in the buildings. So like there's like the idea of internships over the course of the last 2 years is ridiculously like you just can't. But even before that, the idea of internships were getting out of, you know, out of style, de rigueur, whatever you want to say.
Well, I wouldn't recommend someone to do what I did. No, as much fun enough. As it was, I would never recommend it to another yeah. soul. I mean, yeah. it was, I think it sets a bad precedent. And I think that people inherently should value their work. And I take so much more pride in what I do now that I value it and that people agree on that valuation.
Yeah. So did that, no, fair enough. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I want to get paid. I get it. So that internship, did that particular, so working for him, cutting audio, did that turn into a gig for you?
It turned into a once a week, late night, Monday night sports radio show.
Somebody put you on the air.
They put me on the air on that station, which was, it was called Team 990 before it was bought by the TSN Astral Bell merger.
The aforementioned failed national program I was talking about was the team, you know, like.
So there you go. Yeah,
That's the thing. First thing that comes to mind to me is trying to do a national morning show. You know, Paul Romanuk, it had some great guys on that initial lineup of the team. However, nobody in Regina cares what's happening in Ottawa. They just don't.
And Montrealers have zero patience for Toronto Maple Leafs talk.
Exactly. So, I mean, it was doomed to fail from the start.
I don't know how you do it. I really don't know how you do it. And yet the Dan Patricks of the world haven't figured out in the States.
I think that's apples and oranges because because you have unifying sports like NCAA football where allegiances aren't necessarily regional. They definitely are. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. Yeah, I know what you mean. The CFL is a tough talk in this town.
It is in Toronto too. You kidding me? I'm a former season ticket holder. I love the Argos. You talk about that window when we could do things. I went to 4 Argo games. I was the only one there, but I went.
I saw that jacket on Twitter. There you go. That's right. It was really nice.
That's right. That's right. I'm the only guy who cares about them. But yeah, you're right. So a national, you know, I mean, we could talk about, you know, how that's, you know, BTSN and just embrace it and say, you know, call us the Toronto Sports Network. We don't care. Because that's where the most people are. Do you know what I mean? Like that's what they've done on the television side. Outside of, you know, CFL and curling coverage, they really do just talk about Toronto. Like there's not much different. I mean, locally, when you have the local games, obviously it's different, but that's a whole other.
And we, you know, most people that live where I live can express and communicate themselves in both official languages.
Right.
And we have other channels in French that are, you know, here's where Carey Price had dinner last night. Here's where he'll be having breakfast tomorrow. So it's the same level of ridiculousness and oversaturation.
Yeah.
But I can see how somebody in the same Regina would have no patience for either of ours and wants to just hear about the Riders.
Yeah, I get it. I totally understand. So you're with the team at the time doing one night a week overnight. Are you doing a call-in show? Do you get a producer?
I'm doing a call-in show. No, I did not get a producer. I had a technical producer on the board. What I mean.
Do you get a technical producer?
Yes,
at the very least?
Yes. Who is now a technical producer at CJAD. And nice. So we still get to hang out and chat all the time, which is great. But no, it was a once a week. I had carte blanche is what I had, which was wonderful.
Amazing.
And I did a show about sports and social issues.
Wow.
So I talked about gay rights in sports and had, you know, had Patrick Burke on from You Can Play.
What years are we talking?
Anybody else? 2012, 20,
so 10 years ago,
11, 20, yeah, something like that. Yeah. About 10 years ago. And it ran until that merger and then bled over into TSN.
Yep.
And then at a certain point, the program director, who is still the program director, said, hey, he can do more than just talk sports. Let's throw him on air on CJAD.
Okay.
And at that point, I, you know, started getting paid, and that was pretty much it for sports radio.
Yeah.
Which is a shame because I really enjoyed it. And I thought, like, I mean, I got to do some really cool stuff. I got to make Rusty Staub cry on the radio once.
Not everybody can say that.
No, he asked him about his, he had a fund for the families of police officers in New York and in Louisiana who had been shot. He was from New Orleans, and his uncle was a police officer who was shot to death.
Oh, wow.
And he raised, it ramped up after 9/11, but the foundation raised over $100 million for families of bereaved police officers and firefighters, and just this incredible thing. And he teared up talking about it. I got to speak to Jackie Robinson's daughter, Sharon.
Amazing.
About the March on Washington, which their whole family attended. They used to throw jazz concerts. The Robinson family used to throw jazz concerts to have a cash bail fund for when the leaders were arrested, the leaders of the movement were arrested.
Yeah.
And she talked about, you know, Martin Luther King hanging out at the house. And I don't even remember, but like Dizzy Gillespie-esque artists performing in their backyard.
Yeah.
And
that's what sports radio gave you. Because specifically that angle too, right?
Right. Right. Continuing on that theme, Terry Haig joining us in studio and talking about being a kid in Westchester, being invited over to his neighbor's house for dinner, and Jackie Robinson's there.
Yeah.
Just stuff like, so for me, that's, it's sports, but I've always, you know, I'm a huge fan of Dave Zirin, Edge of Sports on Twitter.
Right.
He's a fantastic author. Does a lot of, he wrote a people's history of sports in the United States.
Okay.
Yeah, and I firmly believe that the confluence of sports and politics is something that's inescapable and helps define society. And that's always been my angle. And it's what has made me extremely passionate about sports. I could give a shit who the third line center is. That's never been my thing. And that's never been the type of sports radio that I've cared about either.
It's interesting. Before we got on the air, I was telling you some of the people who'd been on the show, and I mentioned Nadia Lloyd, the Toronto artist who made the Black Lives Matter masks that all the Raptors ended up wearing during the lockout, the initial lockdown, and when they were in the States. And
right, the bubble.
Yes, the bubble. Thank you. And how it was Nick Nurse's wife saw her post in a Facebook group in the neighborhood. And it's a great story, right? It's
cool.
It's not quite, you know, going to dinner with Jackie Robinson, but it's one of those stories that it's neat to be able to have those opportunities to talk to people. And generally speaking, most of sports talk radio, let's face it, is you do have to give a shit who the third line center is, right?
Yeah. So that's why I was on at midnight. On Monday mornings.
And
that's okay. The podcast I still pay Podbean to keep the podcast going so that I can have access to these. I don't ever really go back and listen, but name me another show that when I went on vacation, Jay Baruchel would be my guest host.
Oh, that's fun.
It was a fun time.
So let's talk, because it is a podcast about change.
Yes.
I did a little search on your name, and I find out one day you're leaving to go to Britain. You're leaving radio in 2016. Was that a voluntary? Because we're in radio, and I, if you've ever listened, I know you haven't listened to the podcast, but nobody loves talking about how they got fired more than radio people.
Like, I wasn't fired.
You weren't
fired.
Do you have a firing story before I go any further? Good for you.
But this goes back to the whole being a freelancer.
Right.
Every time that the hammer falls at Bell Media, I know I'm not going to get the call.
Right.
I might get fewer phone calls down the road because of whatever changes are made. And, you know, if the show was run by one host and now there's two, that means there isn't going to be very much vacation time where one isn't covering the other.
The other one.
That's done. But that's beside the point. No, I don't have the overnight that I did in the first wave of COVID. That ended very suddenly.
Abruptly, yeah.
And then 2 days later, I was also doing I was doing Friday nights overnight into Saturday, midnight to 4 a.m.
Right.
National. And then I was doing local 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, straight hard COVID news. This is what you need to know. These are the biggest updates. Here's a doctor. Here's a scientist. Here's someone whose business is affected. Thank you very much. But I was doing it like a zombie because I was working until 4 in the morning and then turning around and right back on air at 11.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting test.
Sure.
Bob, as you know, when you finish one of these shows, you're so high.
Like,
the come down from from doing a radio show is it requires time, and it's hard to train the brain to think, oh God, you got to do this again in 7 hours. So you better get to sleep.
Yeah. You got to figure out a way to get some rest. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So those two shows were canceled within 24 hours of each other.
Okay.
And the explanation was that, much like the reflection that we were seeing from the Canadian economy, sales were not permitting that to happen right now. And I think you probably saw it at your station, and most places saw it. I mean, most Canadians can understand that.
The main reason this podcast exists is I had been with a radio station in here just outside Toronto in Oshawa, Ontario, called 94.9 The Rock. I was the midday host and music director there for nearly 4 years after spending quite a long time at a company called Evanov Radio Group. And But I left to take a contract position. It was a 15-month contract with Bell Media, and I was the program director for two of their AC radio stations, out of St. Catharines and one out of Hamilton. I also did a little stint on air at 97.7 Hits FM while I was there. However, the contract ended September 2020. And as we know, COVID hit March 2020. So between March and September, and it was a calculated risk leaving a full-time, guaranteed paid job for, at a very stable company at DRI, Durham Radio, was a risk, but I wanted to come back and quote and play with the big boys. I wanted to be with one of the bigger companies, and I wanted to get some programming in a market like Hamilton, not at a niche market radio station like I did at Proud FM. So I took that risk. The contract ended and there was no work for me. And then subsequently, anybody in radio would know, 3 months later, they would get rid of 300 people or so in one day, as happens, unfortunately, in this business. So I was like, oh man, this is not good. what am I going to do? So like every guy who's out of radio, what do? Hey, you start a podcast, right? So that's how I ended up starting the podcast, because not because I was fired. I have been fired other places, actually Bell once before. That's another story. but I started the podcast and I wanted to have a hook. And the hook literally came to me in the middle of the night. I woke up and I said, my podcast has to be about change. And I wrote it down. I couldn't tell you. There was something I was working with. I was working with a coach, like a talent coach. And he said, you better make sure your podcast is good. I'm like, yeah, I hope so. You know, I'm going to do my best to try to. And then the good thing was it kept my skills up. And then, but it also kept all the communication with everybody else in the industry open, right?
Of course.
So, and when I did finally get a job back with Chorus Entertainment, which was pretty fast, by January of 2020, it was 21. I'm coming up on my first year anniversary back with Chorus, who I started my career with 20 plus years ago. I decided to keep doing the podcast because I love doing it, because I get to have conversations like this and talk to guys in radio. I talk to people outside. I love talking to bands as well. One of the things that you mentioned, that we follow each other, we both are pretty big music fans, have a common love for the Tragically Hip. You talk about doing your show nationally. That's a pretty national. That's something I think we can all agree on. Generally speaking, most Canadians love the Tragically Hip.
Yes, it is a basically agreeable band. I will say that where I'm from, I'm an outlier.
Yeah, fair enough. Yep.
And it's so interesting to my girlfriend doesn't know who the Tragically Hip are. She's a francophone Canadian.
Does not know at all.
I mean, she knew the name, and sitting on my couch said, I don't know any of their music. And we were flipping through, what was it? We were flipping something on the CBC, and they showed, there's an Anne of Green Gables remake.
Yes.
And the theme song. Right. And the theme song is Ahead by a Century.
Oh, okay.
And she has seen that show. And unlike the Tragically Hip, I guess Anne of Green Gables is basically agreeable across the country. She had read the books and had been to PEI.
Right.
And was well aware of that one song, but that's it. And
wow.
I've seen the Hip many times in Quebec City, and I'd seen them in Montreal. And in Montreal, you never really know. I mean, Montreal, it's sort of like, if you've ever been to Oceaga, 3/4 of it are people from Toronto.
Yes.
And when you go see the Arkells here, it's a bunch of, and I love the Arkells, but it's a bunch of kids from McGill.
Yeah.
And you never really knew if a hip show was Montrealers, or if it was
interesting,
or if it was West Islanders.
West Islanders. Well, I've seen Pearl Jam there several times.
Well, they're in Montreal.
In Montreal.
Oh, yeah, they're massive here.
Yeah,
they're
massive. I've seen Pearl Jam almost 50 times.
Oh, so awesome!
They're okay. My favorite. They're by far. I've seen them in Italy. I saw them in Rome, and I've seen them in Vancouver at the Commodore Ballroom.
Amazing!
I'm a super Pearl Jam fan, and I will say that, generally speaking, anything I've seen in Montreal, there's nothing like a lit Montreal crowd.
Right.
Like when the crowd's in, like, I mean, I've seen the Toronto Maple Leafs against the Montreal Canadiens, not at the forum, but you know, at Bell Center on a Saturday night. And there's nothing like that.
Agreed. And having seen it at the forum, and I can even do this just to show you my forum
please do
seat behind you there.
Oh, you got one. Oh, right there. Yeah, beautiful.
My first hip concert was at the forum.
Oh, wow. That's pretty great.
Yeah. It was minus 28 that day, that February day.
He wrote a song about it, actually.
they sang that song. You don't declare a war on idleness when outside it's cold and shitty. It was on the Day for Night tour.
Yeah.
And that changed the way I listen to music.
Yeah.
That one, talk about change.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The effect that band has had on my life and my development. And I know that they have eschewed nationalism their entire career, in spite of people waving flags.
Sure.
But I'll tell you, as a kid who fell in love with the Tragically Hip at the same time that it felt like his country might be breaking apart, that was my olive branch to the rest of the country. That was what gave me a link to what it felt to be Canadian. And back to what I said at the start, being an English Montrealer is this weird kind of layered onion in whatever it means to be from this country.
Well,
Hip were such a huge part of that for me. And I think that might be something I have in common with someone in Regina, but I've never talked to someone in Regina about it.
I bet you, you do. Your layered onionness of being an Anglo in Montreal. You've brought up something to me that I never knew. I knew there was a difference between West Island, but I never knew the kind of not animosity, but the definition or the defined difference between somebody who's from downtown Montreal. And I mean, it's much like Toronto being an East Ender or a West Ender, but there's no language barrier there, you know?
Oh, I'd say it's more like being a Torontonian from Yonge and Eglinton, or if you're from Aurora, but tell everybody you're from Toronto.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Yeah. So that's it. Oh man, that's saying something right there.
Shots fired.
Yeah, seriously. So I do want to talk to you about the time you did leave radio.
Yeah. So I'm going to just very quickly, I'll tell you, I left radio to go work at radio in England.
You did.
Very quickly. I found my footing over there. Why do we go places? We go for love or money. And I went for love.
So
Sorry.
So tell me the difference between radio over there and radio here. What changed? What did you have to change to get that job over there?
I'll tell you what, I changed nothing, and that's probably why it didn't stick. I got myself in the door at a station called Talk Radio. That's right. Actually the name of the station.
We know what we do here.
Owned by Rupert Murdoch and those folks, those fine folks.
Okay.
And I sold myself as one of my hats is I'm super into American politics.
Okay.
And I sold myself as the guy for them to lean on in the run-up to the 2016 election.
Okay.
And I was covering election day, and I was off to the U.S. embassy to get reaction from people lining up for visas after Trump was elected. And then I was debating the head of the UK Republicans on a Saturday afternoon on the station. They brought me in. They do a thing. I don't know if it really exists here. I know on the French side it does, but they do newspaper reviews. They do it on TV there, and they do it on radio. And they'll have someone in, and they will tell you what's in the five papers of the day.
Yes.
And it's, you know, each paper in England has such a distinct political bent that we do it so you don't have to. Dave Kaufman's here to do the paper review. And the idea would be I would show up an hour or two early for the morning show and pour through the papers and come up with a couple of interesting stories from each paper. And then that would go over for a few segments. super fun stuff. Had a really good time doing it. I covered a protest that that was in front of 10 Downing Street. Theresa May was still Prime Minister of England, and Donald Trump was supposed to come to England, and people were livid. Yeah. Nobody wanted him there. And I went and covered this massive protest, and there were speakers, and Amnesty International covered it. And as I'm walking away, I'm walking along the bridge where Parliament is and where Big Ben is. And I look up, and just as much as I love the Hip, I have the same feeling for the Stones.
Okay.
And I'm telling you, I spent my entire time in London just keeping my eyes open, looking for them. And I look up, and I didn't see Mick, but I look up, and there's Bianca Jagger.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and she's a human rights activist. Yeah. She was there for the thing. And I very quickly go up to her and Miss Jagger, my name is Dave Kaufman. I'm a reporter with a station here. And I'm wondering if I can just get your comments for a couple of minutes, and I'll run them straight to the station and play them. And so did that and took a picture with her. And it was a very, very cool moment. And I've had a few different Stones interactions over the years. I mean, I had Andrew Lou Goldham on my show on New Year's Eve to talk about Charlie Watts.
Right. I saw you tweet about that. Too. Yes. I saw you tweet about that. Yes.
And he's become a pal. He spent some time in Montreal and lives half the year in Vancouver. And once I'm going to go all in on the showing off here. Andrew sent me an email two days ago asking me to direct a friend of his who was not as technologically able to the link for the interview about Charlie.
Okay.
So I do that. And then I get an email back from this woman who is the widow of the late Ian Stewart, who was one of the original Rolling Stones. He was the piano player and looked a little older than the guys. And when Andrew Lou Goldham took over the band, he said, "You can stick around, but you can't be on stage anymore." And he did. And he was the tour manager.
Wow.
And he used to drive them around, and he also used to play the piano.
Wow.
And he's on stage on all the way up into the 82 tour, but he died at age of 47. And his wife, Shirley, his widow, Shirley, emailed me to say how much she enjoyed the interview and how she was at the tribute to Charlie at Ronnie Scott's in London a couple of weeks ago, and how incredible it was, and how there was no media, and it was just family and friends and people that loved Charlie, and how all the Stones were there, and it was just this beautiful night of music and love and jazz, because that's what Charlie loved.
That's amazing. I've had this thought. I had this conversation with a friend of mine, Andy Burns, who writes books about he's a pop culture guy. He doesn't have a podcast. He's got a blog called Biff Pam.
The name rings a bell. He does Biff Radio Pam Toronto, Pop. Right?
He works for Sirius Satellite.
Okay.
He used to work with Jeff Woods, who did not Ongoing History Music. That's Alan Cross. The legends.
Did he do something on Q107?
He used to years ago.
Okay. So from from my drives to Western, maybe. I remember that.
Absolutely. You would probably remember. He worked with Jeff Brown. He was on the Jeff Brown show then at that time. So him and I were talking. You just mentioned, the idea of this guy being too old to be on stage with
right.
the Rolling Stones. And he and I had this conversation about remember in 89, they had the Steel Wheels tour.
That was my first show.
And in 80, me too. And in 89, they were calling it the Steel Wheelchair Tour.
That's right.
And they were 40 something. They were our age. And they were calling at that time. It was like these old rockers going out, and they're doing it still.
Bob,
like
when I found out that Charlie died, it made me want to go see them again. I have such a deep love of that band and such an attachment to them. And so much of it has to do with my mom who passed away in 2015. But took me to my first Stone show and was the reason that Hot Rocks was playing in the car all the time. Right. And, my dad was kind of into like that cheesy early Beatles crap. And my mom just blew him away with these badass Rolling Stones songs.
Yeah.
And up until this year, I had seen the Rolling Stones in every decade of my life, many times, but in every decade of my life. And when I, in spite of COVID and that window opened, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to do it. I got on a plane and I went to LA and I reconnected with some friends and I saw the Stones at SoFi Stadium and it was incredible. And then I thought, that's not enough. I need to do it again. And then a buddy of mine and I got pit tickets and we stood up against the rail 6 feet away from Mick Jagger in Detroit in November.
I saw pictures of that on your Twitter. Yes.
And luckily didn't get COVID. As it turned out, a week later, Michigan was COVID, like the COVID capital of America.
Right, right.
So we dodged a huge bullet, and we were also the only two in our vicinity that were wearing masks. It was a very interesting thing. It was like walking into a different world. But when the edibles hit, Bob,
Well, this is what I was, I mean, if we're going to talk, we're going to stay on music for a bit because, you know, there's no script here. So you see, you've seen them many times and every, you know, at least once in every decade of your life. So how has your relationship with the band changed over the years?
It's interesting. So something I think about a lot, and I've probably seen the Stones 25 times.
Okay.
I saw the Hips 75 times.
Wow. Okay. You got me, man. I saw that. Yeah. I never kept track of my Hips shows, but it would be somewhere in the 30s for sure. And Pearl Jam, if you include solo Eddie Vedder and seeing Pearl Jam on Letterman live.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
If you include all of those, it's somewhere around 45, I think. But so
when I saw Letterman, the guests were Larry Bird and Magic Johnson.
Oh my God, that's great.
Yeah, yeah,
insane. Okay, just because if we're going to be one-upping each other here.
You win, though, because the Kaiser Chiefs were the band. So.
Oh, the Kaiser Chiefs.
Chiefs.
Those are very different. They're just guys who bake.
That's right. It's the guy from the Muppets. It's the Swedish Kaiser Chiefs.
That'd be great.
Bork.
The first time I saw Letterman, was 98, I think, at the Ed Sullivan Theater. And here were the guests. I shit you not. These were the guests. Dennis Hopper, Cheech Marin, and the Sex Pistols.
Wow. Oh, my God.
It could have been 78. Oh my God. It was insane. The Sex Pistols, when they got back together for that reunion in the late 90s. Anyhow, so go back to the question. I'm sorry, because we could do these pop culture things all day.
We're going to be friends. This is awesome. This is like a first date, Bob. I mean,
it's true. Tell me about how your relationship with the band has changed. What's the band meant to you over the years?
So I just want to go back very quickly. The reason I mentioned the Hip was that never in my life did I imagine that I would be able to still see the Stones and not see the Hip.
That's a great. And, wow. Yeah, fair enough.
And,
wow.
And every time that I've been to a show since Gord died, including just, I think it was a day or two after he passed away, I saw Roger Waters at the Bell Center.
That was a great tour. Holy hell.
It was a great tour, but I was not emotionally ready to go to a rock show.
Fair enough.
So soon after my hero died.
Yeah, I get that.
And I have been to many concerts. COVID has cut that down a little bit, but I've been to many concerts since Gord Downie died, and at every single one I've had a moment where I've thought, fuck, this should be the Hip.
Wow.
And as much as I love this isn't the Hip. And the only times I haven't felt that feeling were the four Stone shows I've seen since Gord died.
That's where great,
where I've had a moment where I've thought of him and them and my relationship to them, and I thought, oh, how cool it would have been if they'd opened tonight, but not to replace it. And at that last show, after really my first Stone show, I was 9 years old, Living Color and the Rolling Stones at the Olympic Stadium on December 14th, 1989. It was my mom's birthday. And I feel almost like progressively my seats have gotten better and better and better and better and better. And I broke the bank on the last one. They were not cheap tickets. And normally when I make a big purchase like that, whatever it is, I'm filled with some sort of regret.
Yeah.
This time, not for even a second. It was really the best thing I've ever done. It's the best thing I've ever bought. It's that goes away. I mean, the ticket doesn't even exist. It's on my phone.
Right.
I had the time of my life that night. And I remember sitting there at one point, closing my eyes and thinking, just soak this all in, because this is the culmination of a lifetime of appreciating this music. And nobody in the right mind that only half cares about the band would ever, you know, line up, pay that for tickets and then line up all day in order to
That front run space.
To do that.
Yeah.
And that was what I did for every Hip show. That was, if I had the opportunity, I would you know, pick up my buddy Paul, and we would drive to a field in Vermont, and we would get there at 2 in the afternoon, and hopefully somebody would hook us up with some weed, and we sit there and smoke a few joints and wait for the gates to open and then just run
and get in there
so that we could have that moment with Gord. And to have that moment with Mick Jagger was just insane. You never picture it. And I've seen, you know, I've seen a lot of the greats from fairly close enough that you can see their eyes, and you can see how rehearsed it is, and you can see how much fun they're having. And I mean, this was everything. So if anything, the change has just been augmented over the years. It is just a deeper and deeper appreciation, not just for what their music means, but for what it's meant to me and the significance it's had on my life. And it's funny to group them and the Hip in together. Because if you talk to most members of the Hip, their favorite band is the Stones.
I was going to say, I don't think it's that far of a stretch that they're inextricably linked, I would say, in a lot of ways, especially their early stuff. I mean, the sound is so, so similar in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I mean, and of course they had some really cool moments opening for them as well. Like there were a couple of shows. I know the Hip did a tour in 3 shows in Germany opening for the Stones. There's a really famous photo of them that is around. You see it on the internet every once in a while. I know it's hanging in the bathhouse because a friend of mine recorded an album there and invited me to sleep over for a night. And
pretty amazing.
You know, when you get to go, you get invited to Graceland, you drop everything, right?
I guess so. I was about to say, I had Paul Langlois on the podcast here to talk about, and he talked
Paul's
about
a lovely guy, man,
talking about being in Germany and how they talked their exchange with Charlie Watt. But you won up to me by sleeping at the bathhouse. I mean,
Paul's great. And Paul, when Paul released his first solo album, I believe I was one of a handful of journalists, and I think it was actually 2, and I'm pretty sure the other one isn't allowed to do radio anymore.
Okay.
Because he, you know, had a pretty big show on CBC once upon a time.
Oh, that guy. Yeah.
Yeah, that guy. I think we were the only 2 journalists to reach out to him initially when the first album came. Yeah. And I loved it. I sent him an email, and I sent an email to the record label that was Ching Music, which as it happens is Paul's label.
It's his label. Yeah.
Yeah. And I sent this message being like, hey, I love the album. I host a late night Monday night show on TSN radio. I'd love to have you on. I'd love to have Paul on. And he wrote back, Hey Dave, it's Paul.
Yeah.
Whatever you want, whatever you need.
I did this.
And we've become, I mean, I want to say friends. I would hope that he would say acquaintances.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, on the way back from the show in Detroit, we stopped in Kingston, had a beer with Paul and a couple of his buddies.
Oh,
and
that's great.
And there was something very significant for me.
That's great.
About having that. It was like, you know, having it be connected.
Oh my gosh.
And there's something really special to me about that. And that, you know, it has been important throughout the last few years. Whenever the members from the Hip do something, I've really tried to throw my support behind it.
Yeah.
And whether it's going to Kingston for a charity show that Paul's wife is, because they're trying to build a hospice in Kingston.
Yep.
And are, you know, this close to making it happen. Or, my God, they released, did you hear that? The Road Apples.
Road Apples, with Montreal.
Oh, goodness, yeah,
absolutely.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I had Jake Gold on to talk about, but months before that came out, and he played it for me while we were like off the air. And I was like, this is amazing, man. People go, he was like, you can't tell anybody. I'm like, oh, I'm not going to tell anybody. Don't worry. And then I was lucky enough. Sorry, go ahead.
No. I'm just, I mean, as we continue to play this game, In 2000, I was roommates with Bobby Baker's nephew at Western.
Okay.
Because the world is small.
That's small. Happens.
Yeah. So Pete McNaughton, who is a teacher in Kingston now, he was my roommate, and we jumped in the car and we went down to the Kobo to see the Hip play in December of 2000. It was the An Evening with a Tragically Hip tour. No opening act. Chris Brown and Kate Fenner on stage with them.
Right. So that would be right around when Gord did his solo album as well.
Yeah. It was right around then. I think just before.
Yeah.
And after the show, we're backstage, and somehow I summon up the courage to say to Bobby, You're playing Montreal next week, and it's the anniversary of the Polytechnique massacre. Wouldn't it be cool if you guys played Montreal? And I shit you not, I don't know how to describe the feeling when they play that song.
Oh my God.
I don't know how to describe the feeling in the section when it happened. And I was the only person who stood up and started to scream.
I got chills for you.
It was one of those moments where I felt this incredible connection to this band that,
wow,
that as I got older and got to actually hang out with them and spend time and, you know, by the end, I got to know Gord, you know, in the way that we all wanted a little piece of him.
Yep.
By no means was Gord calling me, but when Gord saw me, it was, "Hey Dave," and a hug, and understood how much he meant to me. And didn't take that lightly, didn't belittle that. And that all started with Paul opening the door because I liked his album and told him.
How lucky are guys like you and I to have had these opportunities? Now I've had a few interactions with, you know, with that band as well. I've literally had none with Pearl Jam, my favorite band. I've held the door for Jeff Ament when he was touring with Three Fish at Lee's Palace. That was it. I held the door for him and he walked by me and that was it. I have had zero interaction with them. I don't even know what I would do. I would lose my mind. It's one of those things. Like, I literally well up with tears thinking about what I would do if I got to sit down and talk to Eddie Vedder. Like, I
used to get emotional before and now it's impossible to hide it. It's right there. It's just a part of me. I mentioned offhand before that I had moved to England for love, and it was it obviously didn't work out, and we're back here and all good, and you know, a chance to love and fall out of love and fall back in again, as life is. But I was on vacation in Greece with that girl when the Hip sent the email out with the news that Gord Downie was sick.
Oh man.
And it was 6 o'clock in the morning in Canada, and it was 12 o'clock in the afternoon in Greece. And she was walking back from the bar towards my spot on the beach and watched me collapse.
Yeah.
And my mom had not passed away long before. She assumed it was my dad.
Right.
She walking, you know, from 100 meters away, watching somebody fall over.
Yeah. Wow.
And right away I wrote Paul.
Yeah, of course.
And I said, I have no words, but I love you and I care about Gord, and I will be home this summer and I will see you. And he wrote me back, Bob, five minutes later.
Are you serious?
5 minutes later.
Oh man.
And said, and I'm paraphrasing it, but essentially said that they've all known for a long time, and Gord's going to do what he does, and he's going to sing until he can't anymore. And they're going to raise awareness and they're going to raise money. And I love you too. And I can't wait to see you.
Oh my God. That's crazy. Shows that, you know, it shows what those guys are though. Like, you know, how I got Paul on the show, I tweeted him. Like I said, "Hey Paul, I don't know if you remember me. You used to come on the Humble and Fred show every now and then. I was Bingo Bob." And he was like, "Yeah, but whatever you need." You know, exactly what you said.
And everything I know about Paul is that if he's listening to this, he's so embarrassed right now from hearing us gush about him. And I will just tell you quickly, the last time I saw Gord was in Quebec City this summer before the final tour. They were doing a fully, completely anniversary tour.
Okay.
And they had played the Festival d'Été de Quebec, which is an incredible music festival that I encourage all your listeners to get to at one point or another.
It's amazing.
Yeah. The Hip didn't play the main stage, but the main stage is on the Plains of Abraham.
Yes.
And at that same festival, the Hip played the first night of the festival and the Stones played the last night of the festival.
And you went to both.
My sister and I stayed up for the entire 10 days.
Yeah, of course.
It was the best. It was the best thing ever, man. Yeah. Oh my God. Oh my God. It was incredible. You know, 2.5 hours from home. And a friend of mine had been a member of the National Assembly, an MPP in Ontario.
Right. Yeah.
And she still had her apartment in the old city.
Oh wow.
So she just told Amy and I to take it for the 10 days.
Amazing.
And we just stayed put and it was incredible. And after the Hip played, we go for beers with Paul and Johnny. And then suddenly it's, oh God, we'd better get back to the tour bus or they're going to leave without us. and my sis and I jump on the tour bus to quickly say hi to the guys and say goodbye to Paul and Johnny. And Gord pulls me aside and he says, Dave, I watched you dance the entire show tonight and you really move.
That's amazing.
And without missing a beat, I looked at him and I went, Gord, you really move me.
Nice.
And that was the last thing I said to Gord Downie.
That's a pretty good, great thing. Last thing to say to Gord Downie.
Yeah.
Oh man. I don't have a goodbye to that. Like that. I was lucky enough to see him perform The Secret Path.
Oh, cool.
At Massey Hall here.
Cool.
Or not Massey Hall, excuse me, Roy Thompson Hall. And
Right.
But it was just, it's like just haunting already without him knowing he was sick and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, we could talk, oh my gosh, this has turned into a Tragically Hip podcast, of which there are many.
Whenever you want to do that. Yeah.
Of which there are many. There are a few out there, but man, oh man, Dave Kaufman. I usually try to keep this around an hour. We're at about an hour mark here.
Change is good, Bob. Yeah, change, man. Is good. Change is important. And it's, I feel like I have been blessed by embracing change.
The more I
do that, the better off I am.
I was going to end with this because I had Bill Wilichka on, also a good friend with the band.
Yeah,
with the Tragically
Hip. I'm a big fan of his.
Yeah, so he does. So I'm at Chorus Kingston. He does the morning show on the TV side.
Right.
And I'm the program director of the two radio stations. So I work indirectly with him and had him on the podcast just before the end of the year. And he said he hated change. He doesn't like change. He doesn't deal well with change. He likes stability. And so I was going to end and ask you, but you almost answered my question just by saying, you embrace change, right?
I do. But give me my comforts, give me my music, give me my TV shows that I can wrap myself in like a blanket. But no, change, it makes things exciting. I think one of the reasons that I do what I do for a living is to experience change on a daily basis, because without it, I grow bored, and I grow bored quickly. So I think I can extrapolate that into other parts of my life as well. And I think that change, I like the idea of knowing how I react. It's a strange comparison and I don't know if it'll resonate, but I picked up golf pretty diligently, pretty ardently during the pandemic. And there's something about the mixed sports metaphor here, the curveballs that game throws you.
Yep.
There's something about the knocks that you take when you're playing that teach you something about yourself. And it is this thing where you're striving for consistency, but man, you ain't gonna get it.
Oh, no.
You ain't gonna get it. And I'm not good. I am as far from good as you can be, but I'm out there and I'm embracing it. And I try to wear it with a smile and not let it destroy me when I struggle. And I think that there's a pretty apt metaphor when I go around that course in the summers for what I'm trying to do with my life.
Golf is the crack of sports, because you can play golf one round and you'll do something like Tiger Woods. You will be able to putt a 35-foot putt just by accident, or you might crush one 300 yards once, straight as an arrow. But do it once and then you're always going to want to do it again. And you can play hockey your whole life and you'll never do anything like Wayne Gretzky. Ever. Nothing, not even close. But golf is that sport that you can do that. And that's, I'll take that from Humble Howard. He's an avid golfer. And he taught me that when him and I were golfing. It's the crack of sports, man.
Well, there you go. I guess I'm jonesing.
No kidding. Thank you so much, Dave Kaufman. Listen for Dave Kaufman on the iHeartRadio network. You're doing a bunch of fill-in as they come along, right? That's kind of what you do right now. And also the
podcast. Yeah, well, and I'll throw out the end. And if anybody likes what I'm doing and wants to hear it on a more permanent basis, get in touch.
There you go. Follow is it the Dave Kaufman Show?
The
Kaufman Show on Twitter. And what's the name of the podcast you do with all those smart people?
It's The New Normal, brought to you by Delve. If you type in my name and Delve or McGill, you'll find it.
Dave, this has been a lot of fun, man. I don't know how much I stayed on topic, but it's been a great conversation.
Bob, you don't get to make a lot of new friends during a pandemic. And I really enjoyed my time in the basement. So I hope we can do this in person. And I hope we can chat again one day.
I love your town. I can't wait to get back there.
Please, anytime, man. Come in for a show.
We got to start making changes.
This has been Bob's Basement. Thanks for listening.
Things change. That's the way it is.
For more information, email Bob at bobwillette@gmail.com. That's Bob Willette. Like Gillette.
with a W.
Follow Bob on Twitter at Bob Willette. Bob's Basement is available where you find your favorite podcasts. Until next time.
Well, that's the way it is.